All right, good morning, everyone. It's 9 a.m. on Thursday, October 11th. This is the date and time set for the meeting of the Utah State Tax Commission. I'm Commissioner Bruce Johnson. With me is Commissioner Mark Johnson. Commissioner Darcy Dixon is with us by phone. Commissioner Michael Cragen is here, and our Executive Director, Barry Conover. Also present is Krista Johnson, our Executive Assistant. The first item on the agenda is public comment. I see no members of the public that wish to comment at this time, so we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is to consider approving the open and closed commission meeting minutes of Thursday, September 27th, 2012. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously. Thank you. The next item is approve a submission of certain proposed rules. Let me go first to Commissioner Cragen.
Thank you. We have two what I would call cleanup amendments. The first is to R8611A12. This is in response to Salt Lake County's request at our last commission meeting that we make a slight change to a rule amendment that we were considering at that last meeting. And I think that the only change is on line 37, where we're adding in the phrase "or allowed." So the line will now read, "The disclosure is required or allowed under state law." And as I understand from Salt Lake County's deputy district attorney, that will satisfy their concerns that they had with the rule that we had adopted. The second one is some changes to R8824P66. We had made some major changes to this earlier this year, and on line 62, we had indicated that the County Board of Equalization should notify the taxpayer in writing of the board's decision. Similarly, on line 73, we indicated that certain decisions of the Board of Equalization need to be in writing. However, on line 37, we had left out the phrase "in writing" when we told the county to notify the taxpayer. And so as a in an effort to be uniform internally within this section of the rule, we're going to insert the phrase "in writing" on line 37. Those are the two proposed changes that we would send up to the Division of Administrative Rules no later than the 15th of October. They would then be published in the November 1st Utah Register, open for public comment through the end of November, and then at our first commission meeting in December, we could take action on adopting them. I'm prepared to make a motion unless we've got questions that we need to discuss.
Are there any questions from Commissioner Cragen?
No.
Seeing none?
I'd move that we submit the two proposed rule amendments to the Division of Administrative Rules for publication in the Utah Register.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion passes unanimously. Commissioner Dixon, the next item on the agenda is the farmland assessment rule.
Yes, thank you. Would you like to give a little background on this? By law, there is a committee called the State Farmland Evaluation Advisory Committee. And that's by Utah Code Annotated 59-2-514. And it prescribes a committee that's supposed to look at classifications of land dedicated to agricultural use for the purpose of deciding how to value it under the Greenbelt statute. So this committee is unusual in that it really only meets once a year to look at those values, and then we do one other electronic meeting for the purposes of trying to approve the minutes. So let me just go through who the members members of this committee are. We have Dr. Don Snyder, who is a professor with Utah State University, and by statute, he's an appointee of the president of Utah State University. Then Mr. Kyle Stevens, who's the deputy commissioner of the Utah Department of Agriculture, and by statute, he's the appointee of the commissioner of the Department of Agriculture and Food. Mr. Greg Garg, the assessor of Duchesne County, who by statute, the appointee of the State County Assessors Association. Myself, Michelle Dixon, who's an appointee by statute of the chair of the State Tax Commission. And finally, Mr. Rex Larson of Larson Farm Products, who is a representative of the farming and ranching community, appointed by all the other fellow committee members of this advisory committee on state farmland. We met, this committee met on Wednesday, October 3rd. And I want to report a little bit about this committee meeting because it gives the background for the rule, the proposal that you have in front of you. First of all, it's important that I note to you that we did our Open and Public Meetings Act training by law, and by administrative role, we have, as the Tax Commission designated, that State Farmland Evaluation Advisory Committee is a public body, must meet in an open and public meeting setting, which we did, in the room in which we're meeting right now, and that we have Open and Public Meetings Act training, which we have. And the main purpose of that meeting was to have the report of the farmland evaluation by Utah State University. And that report has been provided to you as commission members. That report will be published online for the public to view and to read when this rule, when the proof goes up to administrative rules for publishing for the 30-day comment period, so that the public will be able to understand what went into deciding the proposed values for valuing this farmland. A couple of things I'd just like to point out in this report prepared by Utah State University. And this report is done under contract with our property tax division, and I know I'm not there, but I'm sure that there's some members from the property tax division in the audience today.
Mr. Lytle is here with us.
Okay. On page 6 of the report, there's a lot of different factors that go into looking at what affects the values of farmland are. And on page 6 of the table 1, which is called average prices received, and it's important to know about this report that we're always 2 years behind what we're trying to value. So the proposed rule before you has values that we're proposing to set for the meeting date, January 1, 2013. But the most recent value we have to you is 2011. And that's what this table shows, is it shows the last value for 2011. And the second thing is that we always do it on a 5-year average. So that's why you see the years, the values, the average prices for 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Because last year's values, January 1, 2012, were done on a 5-year average of 2006 to 2010. This year, we drop off the value for 2006 and pick up the value for 2011, and we do an average of those 5. So I think that's a really important table for helping to understand how these values come together. And it's interesting to note that the year that we're dropping off has lower value than the year 2011 that we're picking up. And we'll have an impact on the valuation this year. The next one I'd like to bring to your attention is on page 8 of the report. table three.
Darcy, we're losing you now.
You're losing me?
Yep. You just faded out there for a minute, but we heard the reference to table eight, or to page eight.
Okay, so on page eight, is that better?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you for telling me. On page eight, there's table three at the very top that says cost of some basic input categories. One of the impacts to the valuing of land is the cost that is incurred in producing agricultural land. And this gives some of the costs that impact that. And you'll see that these costs are fertilizer, chemicals, fuel, machinery, seed, interest costs, and consumer price index. Consumer price index isn't necessarily cost, but it's a benchmark, and that's what I want to explain. Fertilizer went up 22%, and the main reason that went up 22% is because of fuel, the cost of fuel to produce fertilizer. But on this chart, you'll see that the only cost that went down is the interest rate, which went down by 1.25%, but all the other costs went up. And then a benchmark against it is the consumer price index. On average, the consumer price index went up 3.4%, but all the other input costs except for chemicals went up higher than that. So that has an impact on the economy. I to take you to page 10. About just below the bottom of it is figure one. Figure one is titled Historical Moving Average Cost. And this just illustrates why it's really important to the agricultural producers in our state that we do this on a five-year average. The most important thing to agricultural producers is that there be some type of stability and predictability. And so on here are five different lines that represent a 1 year, a 3 year, a 5 year, and a 10 year. So in blue, you can see that there's, which is the 1 year rate, you can see that there's these really larger valleys and mountains, hills and valleys. When you start taking it to a 3 year, it starts to level, 3 year average, it starts to level off a little bit more. The 5 year, even a little bit more, just predictable. If it's going down, it's a little bit more just on a regular basis. That's just, again, to explain why we do a five-year average when we're trying to value this farmland every year. And then just some interesting parts to this, just two other things that on page 11, I didn't show it to another one, but on, we were looking at one chart on page 6. Safflower continues to be a growing crop in the state of Utah, as maybe some alfalfa is taken out and safflower is planted in its place. So it's a new crop that we're trying to follow and value. And another one that's growing is these tart cherries. And that's just sort of a fun little tip that I throw in. Finally, on, trying to get down here as I'm, sorry, my mouse cursor is sticking here, but in the executive summary, which is at the very beginning of the report, it's an excellent summary of how this farmland is finally valued. There's six main valuation: irrigated cropland, orchard cropland, meadow cropland, dry cropland, existing land, and non-production land. And those are how these are valued on that. And for the most part, that gives the summary that irrigated counties declined throughout the state. Meadow crop land had some increasing value. Dry crop land, there's no change recommended. Grazing land had some impact this year. And the non-production land, there was a recommendation of no change in value. So I just wanted to give you some background on that. Mr. Lytle, does he have anything else that he would like to say on behalf of the department? As always, we appreciate Mr. Lytle and his team, which includes himself as the director of the property tax division, his assistant director, Craig Jolly, Mr. Carol Osborne, who's the real property director. And I don't know if they have anything else to add.
Mr. Lytle is indicating that he doesn't have anything to add.
Okay. Are there any questions from my fellow commissioners?
Any questions for Commissioner Dixon?
No.
No. It's a very thorough presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I was just wondering, also, I did neglect to point out one other item that I would like to We also have a non-voting ad hoc member of this advisory committee, and that's a representative of the Utah Farm Bureau. For the last 20 years, that's just been the standard of practice to invite the Farm Bureau to be there. It's a public meeting, but to be there and participate in it. And we did have Mr. Sterling Brown, the Vice President for Public Policy of the Utah Farm Bureau, there to just represent and ask questions. And as always, we appreciate our executive assistant, Mr. Johnson, who was there in 2 minutes. And finally, before we take a vote, I would just like the commission to know that we do have a meeting scheduled, an electronic meeting, which by tax commission rule we can have an electronic meeting scheduled on Tuesday, November 13th for the purposes of approving our minutes for this meeting where we consider this report so that under the Open Public Meetings Act, we do have our minutes available to the public. So with that, I would move approval of Rule R884-24P-53, the 2013 Valuation Guide for Valuation of Land subject to the Farmland Assessment Act to the Division of Administrative Rules for publication in the Utah Register.
Thank you. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda, I think, is also yours, Commissioner Dixon, the acceptance of the internal audit report of the uninsured motorist information database.
Yeah.
And we'll note that Aman Kudai is here with us.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Aman Kudai is our Director of Internal Audit, which is a function in the Office of the Commission. Which is a report that by state statute, this audit must be done every 3 years by our Internal Audit Department Division.
Unit.
In review of the uninsured motorist information database, our internal audit reports are protected, but they have been provided to the commission. Well, Mr. Katia, could you please come to the microphone? I just want to make sure he's at the table.
Good morning, Commissioner Dixon. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Sorry that I couldn't be there with you today.
That's okay.
Looking at, because there are parts of that that are in the statute, which is public information, not so much your finding, but what it is that by statute you're supposed to be looking at and doing.
Certainly. The uninsured motorist identification database program is managed by the three parties, the independent third party, which matches the insurance verification of the motor vehicles. And then there is a Utah State Tax Commission Division of Motor Vehicle. They provide the information about the vehicle's registration. And the Department of Public Safety, they provide the driver's license information and also provide information to the law enforcement personnel when they pull any vehicle to identify whether the vehicle is insured or not. Our job is to make sure that the data or the is 95 to 99% accurate as maintained by the third party. In this case, it is InsureRight Incorporation. What we did was that we selected a sample of 200 vehicles and drafted a letter, sent it to the registered owners of those vehicles to confirm whether those vehicles were in fact insured for a certain time period. In this case, it was for December 2011. Out of 200, we received a confirmation of 132 letters, which is 66% of our total sample size, which is really good in the sense that it has been increasing. In the past year or 3 years ago, when we did that same audit, it was 62%. So people are complying, and our response rate is good. Then what we did was that we got the insurance policy number from the registered owners and went to access with the InsureRight database to confirm it that the vehicle policy number and the name of the vehicle and the name of the owner is in fact correct. There we had a success rate of 97%. Another step we took was we went to the, we called the insurance companies to confirm the policies that they are in fact were insured for that particular time. And here again, we had a success rate of 97%. The legislature allows that it should be with the accuracy should be around 95 to 97%, and we are meeting that goal. So that's a basic the summary we have. I have. Are there any questions?
I had a question. Has this letter been sent to Commissioner Davenport yet?
Yes, it has been sent.
It's already gone?
Yes. Okay. And also a copy of this to the InsureRight.
So it goes out before the tax commission accepts it then?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Amana, I think you also in your report stated that you felt that the statutory level of acceptability was also reasonable from an auditing point of view?
Yes.
Because we could, if we thought they were being too lax, we could ask them to tighten that up. But you feel that's a reasonable level
that
of accuracy.
True.
Thank you, Commissioner Dixon.
No.
I don't see anyone. The closest we've got is an executive director and an assistant executive director.
Okay. I just didn't want to neglect noticing them. They do participate in helping to make sure that this audit goes well. They do also see the audit report. So just wanted to make sure I had a chance to recognize them.
We'll make sure that Mr. Conover passes that message along.
Message received.
Thank you. So with that, I would move, and I do appreciate the good work that the committee has done. This was his first report as
Commissioner Dixon, before you make that motion, I think Mr. Cadilla has one more thing he'd like to say.
I got one question. Should we send this report after the commissioners have approved in a meeting, or should we send a letter to the DPS before that? I mean, this is the first time I've done it, and I sent the letter after I had given the report, a draft copy of the report, to all the commissioners to see if there, and the executive director, for any changes or any comments or any information they want to add or delete. I didn't receive any negative comments, so I assume that everything is correct. Now, a question was raised that should we send it? I mean, is it sent before it's approved or after? And that's up to the commission to make the decision that when it should be sent to the director of the public safety or commissioner to the public safety.
Well, I would just express the opinion that I would think that the tax commission ought to accept the report before any official copy is sent out. But I thought that maybe I would discuss the issue with Commissioner Dixon at a later time.
Yeah, that's good. That would be very helpful for me.
Okay, Commissioner Dixon. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, the next item on the agenda is involves the Gillette decision. As we mentioned, I think, in our last meeting, the California Court of Appeals, in the case of Gillette, held that the multi-state tax compact as adopted by California precluded California from changing the statutory apportionment formula for income that was set out in Article 4 of the compact. The court felt that the only choice California had was either to accept those provisions or withdraw from the compact. In anticipation of that decision, California did, in fact, withdraw from the compact. The decision was originally withdrawn and has now been reinstated. We have been asked by the Franchise Tax Board of California to send a letter to the Supreme Court of the state of California recommending that they grant cert to hear this case. The discretion in the Supreme Court in California has discretionary review. It doesn't need to take this case. The Franchise Tax Board, and certainly my feeling, is that this is an important case that should be reviewed by the California Supreme Court. Obviously, decisions of the California courts are not binding on Utah, but they may be influential. And I would say also it would certainly be to the benefit of the Multi-State Tax Commission if they could continue to have California as a contributing member. So my recommendation is that we send this letter that has been drafted with the assistance of the Attorney General's office, specifically Clark Snelson, that we send this letter to the California Supreme Court requesting them to grant review of this case. Are there any questions regarding that? Does the auditing division have anything they'd like to add on that?
It's not worth that.
Pardon me?
This is Greg Sandberg, Director of the Auditing Division. I have not seen the letter, but
Okay, Mr. Sandberg did not come to the microphone, and I don't know if it was picked up, but he stated, although he hasn't seen the specific language of the letter, he supports the concept of asking for Supreme Court review. Seeing no other questions, I will, sometimes chairs can't move. Can we move? Can I make a motion, or do I need to ask someone else to make a motion? I'm looking at our parliamentarian, Commissioner Cragen.
I don't know that we've ever researched that question, but in the absence of any research, how about if I make a motion for you? Just
all right, that would be fine. I can use all the help I can get.
I would move that we send a letter to the California Supreme Court on behalf of the four Utah State Tax Commissioners and authorize the chairman's signature to that letter.
Any further discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Dixon? Commissioner?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I had to cough and didn't want to cough into the microphone.
Mute buttons are wonderful things, but they can trick you up sometimes. Thank you very much. That motion is passed unanimously. Is number 10 one that we'll need to go into closed session for?
Yeah, do we need to be in closed session to discuss
okay.
that?
In that case, let's go on to the next agenda item, which is the Executive Director's Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Barry Conover, Executive Director. We don't have a whole lot to report in this meeting. However, we are still waiting for the final report on our Deloitte & Touche security assessment. It's 90% completed in the last steering committee. I expect to have a copy of that next week and going over that with the project director from Deloitte & Touche and also DTS management. Also, in the last couple of weeks, we've tightened up the security of our building, as everyone has been aware. And we've had a few little glitches, but we've been able to work those out, and we'll be making some modifications to some of our exit strategy to accommodate folks that leave a little bit later than 6:30. So we'll take care of that. I haven't heard any other complaints other than just those items that folks couldn't get out easily, and because we like them here. It's good security. Anyway, that's all that I have today.
Any questions for Director Conover? One question and then a comment. I got an email, I think it was either this morning or yesterday, that the state will be going live with Google Gmail.
Right.
Are we... we ready to go on that?
You know, we are. In fact, we've been ready for about 2 months with the approval of the Internal Revenue Service. We have 90 days to comply in our field audit communications after we go live with Gmail. That is November 13th. And then with our internal workings of email, we have 120 days to deal with that, and we may have to have some tokens to comply with that. We're still working on that. Multi-factor authentication is the issues that the IRS is saying that we need to comply with, and they've given us some time. Training will be starting up again probably within the next week from Tempus Nova, and our folks will be asked to get involved in that. We're also identifying those individuals that need to have GMD, which is the audit tool that we have, checking for FTI. We'll have those licenses run $25 a piece on an annualized basis, And so
FTI is federal taxable income.
Federal taxable income.
That's the only acronym in there that I recognize, so I thought I'd.
Oh, GMD is the Google Management Discovery, and that, when I heard that, I didn't mean any more difference than GMD to me. But we also, the state has also going to be encrypting all email, and that is statewide, those folks using Google. So I think the state's in good shape to move forward on November 13th. There'll be a lot of questions. We'll want our division directors to make sure that their staff goes through the tutorials and becomes skilled in Google. And I think we're sitting in very good shape.
Thank you. The other thing I'd like to mention is just a pat on the back for the Division of Motor Vehicles. My daughter paid off, or at least her father paid off on her behalf, her car loan, and we were getting a new title issued, and because I was, things do get lost sometimes, I decided I ought to make a copy of the title before I submitted it, and I was pleased to notice that the copy came out with void written all over it. Apparently the paper is such that when it's presented to the heat and light of a copy machine, that it prints out void to make it much more difficult to counterfeit those titles or to copy those titles. And I'm informed it also works in scanning machines for all but the most advanced scanners. And I guess there's an arms race between the scanners and the paper technology, and the scanners are momentarily slightly ahead, but I appreciate those efforts to protect our taxpayers and our car owners, and I was impressed by that technology.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've tried very hard over the years. That special paper is coming out of England. It's out of the same banknote people that do checks. It's very expensive. And they're having a problem trying to get that. It has probably about 17 other fraudulent characteristics within that paper that would.
Or at least fraud prevention characteristics.
Yeah, fraud prevention characteristics. Yeah. Those darn copiers, some of them, yeah, it's kind of interesting, that technology.
All right, thank you. Anything, any other questions for Director Conover? Commissioners' reports. Do any of the commissioners have anything else they'd like to report?
I had one item.
Just mentioned
that we held three conference calls and using GoToMeeting so that the counties could get a refresher update on using our Justice Web online filing tool, and we had 13 counties participate over the course of the three different webinars that we offered. And we see that Salt Lake County has made a commitment to use the online filing, which I think is going to increase notably. Let me rephrase it. It's going to decrease notably the amount of time it takes to get all of their appeals into our system for this Board of Equalization season.
Very good. All right, seeing no other reports from the commissioners, Commissioner Cragen, is this your item on item number 10?
Sure. We need to go into closed session to discuss pending litigation, and we've got John McCary here to have that discussion with us. So I would make a motion that the commission go into closed session to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That motion passes unanimously. We will now go into closed session. Thank you.
This is Commissioner Mark Johnson. It's approximately 10:20 a.m. We have finished our closed session and are back in the open session. We have concluded our business and are prepared to end the open session. Do we need a motion to that effect?
Yes.
Mr. Dixon, are you still with us?
I am.
Okay, I think you were muted, so you probably didn't hear what Commissioner Mark Johnson just said. You might want to restate it.
I just mentioned that we're back in the open session, gave the time. Commissioner Johnson, Bruce Johnson is excused and prepared to take a motion if there's no more business to end the open session.
I'll move we adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned.